Now we're holding on your Aleph Omid Beis about a third of the way down the Omud, like two dots. So continuing Darshan in the Psukim of the Megillah, the Pasuk says, by Yom Mahim, in those days, Kesheves HaMelech, when the king sat on his throne, Uchtir Basra, and then the next Pasuk continues, Bishnas Sholish L'molcha, in the third year of his kingship, is Achashverosh's kingship, is when he made his big parties. So what was it? Is when he first sat on the throne, or only later on in his third year? So Omar Rava, my Kesheves, Wa'achash Nisiyash V'daitei. The word Kesheves doesn't mean when he first sat on his throne. It means when his mind was set at ease. Up until now, up until this third year, he thought that the Jews might become independent of him. Now, in the third year, he sees that that's not happening, as we're going to go on to show, and therefore now he felt more at ease, and therefore he made his party. Omar, so he says, what's going on? What do we mean by he's not concerned that the Jews are going to become independent anymore? He says, Belshatza choshevata, Belshatza made a mistake, calculated, but made a mistake, as we're going to say. I'm going to make the calculation, I'm not going to be mistaken. Maihi, so what do we mean? What calculation? So dichtiv. So now you can refer to the paper that I put on the WhatsApp group that gives more of the details, but we'll go through the Gemara. The pasuk says Yehu had said many years earlier, ki lefi malois levav al shivim shana efkadestem. When 70 years have passed for Bavel, then I will remember you, Hashem says, and bring you back to Eretz Yisrael. But a different pasuk says, "Lamalos v'chorvitz Yerushalayim shivim shana," to fill in 70 years from the destruction of Yerushalayim. Actually, the Rashash says this pasuk, the second pasuk, is a little bit out of place over here. It belongs later on in the sugya, where we're going to point out that there were different possible beginning points for the 70 years. Now, that's the point. In other words, Yirmiyahu had said that it's going to be 70 years of Babel, but 70 years from what? So as we're going to say, Belshazzar calculated from when Nebuchadnezzar, from when Babel first became a world power. So Chashoyv Aboyin V'Chomesh to Nebuchadnezzar. So Belshazzar figured you have 45 years that Nebuchadnezzar ruled. Okay, we're saying on the paper over here it was really 44 and a fraction, but right now we're talking whole years. The Esther Mitplas to Evel Meroidach, 23 years of Evel Meroidach makes 68 so far. The Tauti Didei, 2 years of Belshazzar himself, Hashivim, so that makes up 70. So now, when he started his third year, and he saw, look at this, the Jewish people haven't been redeemed, Hashem hasn't brought them back to Eretz Yisrael, so he figured it's not going to happen. Either he thought that the Nevuah is not true, or, I mean, it would have been hard to do that. Everybody knew that Nehemiah was a Navi Emes. So some of the Mephoshim point out, I think that Ion Yaakov points out, that maybe he figured they might have lost the schus to be redeemed after 70 years because they bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue, as we're going to talk about later in the Gemara. Whatever the case, he figured 70 years are up, and nothing happened. Because at this point, again, you have between the reign of Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadnezzar's son Evel Meroidach, and Evel Meroidach's son Belshazzar, so far we've got 70 years. Apik money to be Makdisha, so he took out the Kalim of the Beis Mikdash, which had been plundered many years earlier by Nebuchadnezzar, the Ishtamash Bahu, and he used them. Up until that point, all the kings of Babel, even though they had these Kalim of the Beis Mikdash in their treasuries or in temples of their Getchkes, whatever it is, they didn't dare use them because they knew that they were going to call down anger from Hashem on themselves. But Belshazzar now figured the 70 years are up, nothing's happening, I can do whatever I want. So he did that. And then the upshot was, as the posse goes on to describe, there was the famous handwriting on the wall, and Daniel came and explained to Belshazzar that the message means that your time is up, your kingdom is over. So first of all, let's figure out, how do we know those figures? When we said Nebuchadnezzar was king 45 years and Evel Meroidach 23 and so forth, how do we know those figures? How do we know that Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years? So like this, the Amamar, we learn in the Braisa about the various Goliaths of the Jewish people. Golu b'sheva, Golu b'shmoina, they went into Golos in the seventh year and in the eighth year. Golu b'shmoina, Esrei, Golu b'tshaesrei, they went into Golos in the 18th year and they went into Golos in the 19th year. Now, the point is, the Braisa goes on to explain, we don't mean that there were four separate Goliaths, we mean that there were two. One, there were two 11 years apart. Namely, the point is, because when you look at the Psukim, you have these Goliaths are described at the end of Sefer Melachim. They're also described at the end of Sefer Yirmiyah. And there's a little inconsistency between them, because in one place it says that the first Golos of Yechoniah, together with the Choresh Vamaskir, this is what we mentioned, the Megillah, Shehoglam Yerushalayim, that Mordechai was exiled from Yerushalayim, Ima Gola, Ashehoglosa, Im Yechoniah Melech Yehuda. So that in one place it says that took place in the seventh year, in another place it says it took place in the eighth year. So what it means is, Golu v'sheva l'kibush yoyokim, Golus Yehoyachin. So in the seventh year, since Nebuchadnezzar had conquered, had dominated Yehoyachin and made Yehoyachin, who was one of the last kings of Yehuda, his vassal, from then, counting 7 years later, you had Golus Yehoyachin, you had then Yechoniah, Yehoyachin's son, was taken into Golus. Bekitzer, Yehoyachin was the king of Yehuda. He was an out-and-out Yosha. He had been a vassal of Nebuchadnezzar for several years. Then he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar invaded and put down the rebellion, killed Yehoyachin, who actually the Medrash mentions possibilities that maybe Yehoyachin died as they were lowering him down the wall to Nebuchadnezzar. Whatever the case, he's dead. Yechoniah was appointed king instead. Then Nebuchadnezzar comes and captures Yechoniah and takes him, together with the great Talmid Chachamim, the Choresh Vahamaskir, into Golus. In any case, so that was 7 years since Nebuchadnezzar had first conquered Eretz Yisrael and made Yehoyachin his vassal. So that's why we call it the seventh year. That is the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar's own rule, because he himself, as we're going to say, started ruling 1 year before he did that. So that's the first Golos. We call it 7/8, because it was 7 years since the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, since Nebuchadnezzar had become the overlord of Eretz Yisrael, and it was 8 years since Nebuchadnezzar himself had become king. Then you have, the next thing is, you have Tzidkiyahu is appointed the next and last king of Yehuda. 11 years later comes the Churban, and Golos B'Shmoina Esra, the Kibosh Yehoyakim, Golos Tzidkiyahu, in the 18th year since Yehoyakim was conquered and made a vassal, you have the Golos of Tzidkiyahu and the Churban, Shehi Tshasra and Nebuchadnezzar, which was the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar's own kingship. So there was always 1 year apart. To Amar Shana to Shana Kibush Ninve, because we also learn in a Braisa that in the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, he conquered Ninve, which was the capital of Ashur. So previously, Ashur had been the world power. They're the ones who had Sancheirev as king. So now they were falling apart. So Nebuchadnezzar conquered them and put an end to their empire, and now ends the empire, the Assyrian empire, and begins the Babylonian empire, and then. Shnia, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Kibish Yehoyakim, he conquered Yehoyakim and forced Yehoyakim to be his vassal and pay him tribute, etc. So far we've established that the Golos of Yechoniah took place in Nebuchadnezzar's eighth year of his reign. That's why, which is why we call it the seventh and the eighth, because it was the seventh since he had conquered Yehoyakim, but the eighth since he himself had begun ruling. Now, Uchtiv, now at the end of Sefer Yirmiyah, also at the end of Melachim, it says, Vayhi b'shloishim v'sheva shana l'golos Yehoyachin melech Yehuda, in the 37th year of the golos of Yehoyachin, which is another name for Yechoniah, the king of Yehuda, v'shnei masa chodesh, in the 12th month, v'esrim v'chamisha b'chodesh, on the 25th of the month, so the 25th of Adar, then Nebuchadnezzar was dead. Evel Merodach, his son, took over as king. Nosa Evel Merodach, Melech Babel, Vishnas Malchus. So Evel Merodach, the new king of Babel, in the first year of his reign, lifted up as Rosh Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda, the head of Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda, meaning the Nosa as Rosh is like when you have in the Pesukim, Nosa as Rosh means to count. Means that he counted, he considered Yehoyachin to be important by Yotze Osim and Beis HaKela, and he took him out of jail. So that was 37 years after Yehoyachin had been taken into Golos and put in jail. So Tamni Utlosin Vesheva. So you have 8 years of Nebuchadnezzar's reign until he imprisoned Yehoyachin, and 37 years after that, Hare Aboin Vachomish. So there was your 45 that Nebuchadnezzar ruled. Rashi also, in the course of this, discusses some other psukim that you find in this connection and explains how they fit into the chronology. For example, the beginning of Sefer Daniel, it says that in the third year of Yehoyakim, he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. Now, what third year? He was king for 11 years. It means the third year since he started revolting. There had been 3 years. From when Nebuchadnezzar started dominating him, where he was. Yehoyakim himself had been king for 4 years by the time Nebuchadnezzar conquered him. He was already in his fourth year. So then for 3 years, he submits to Nebuchadnezzar's overlordship. Then for another 3 years, he rebelled. And that brings us to the 11th year, which is when Nebuchadnezzar invaded Eretz Yisrael and killed him and so forth. Anyway, Nebuchadnezzar, we see from the Psukim, ruled for 45 years. Because again, all we have to do is take the 8 years till he put Yechoniah in jail, and we said that Yechoniah was in jail for 37 years. Next, the Esrin Atlas to Evel Meroidach. How do we know next that Evel Meroidach ruled for 23 years? Gemara, that we only know, but Kabbalah, there's no Pasuk that tells us so. The Tauti day, now again, we're saying that Belshazzar himself had ruled for 2 years by this point when he made his party. And the point is, actually, you have there's one part. So first of all, Rashi explains we know that because after all we need 70 years, and now we need 2 years to reach 70. But also, Mefarshim explain also that you have a pasuk someplace in Sefer Daniel that mentions the third year of Belshazzar. There's never any date mentioned after that. And that implies that was the last year of his reign. Therefore, he only ruled for 3 years or two and a fraction, whatever. Anyway, so now that he figured Hoshavin, so now we're up to 70 years. Omar, so Belshazzar says to himself, Hashta Vade Tula Mifriki. Now surely the Jewish people are not going to be taken out of Golos, because 70 years have passed and nothing happened. Apik money de Bimakisha. So he took out the Kalim of the Bez Mikdash, the Ishtamish Bahu, and he used them in his poem. The Hainu de Carmelite Daniel, that explains what Daniel said to him when Belshazzar and his court saw the writing on the wall, Menei Menei to Cable Pirsin, and they couldn't understand what it meant, and they called him Daniel. So Daniel tells him, the Al Morish Maya history Mamta, look at what you did, Belshazzar. You raised yourself up in a chutzpah way against Hashem, the master of heaven. And they brought the kalim of his house before you. And he tells Belshazzar, because of that, you lost your kingship and your empire is over. And the pasuk finishes off. That parak finishes off. Bebelelia, on that very night, till Belshazzar, Malka Kastoi, Belshazzar, the Kasti king, the Kastim is a sub-nation of Babel. So on that night, Belshazzar, the Kasti king, was killed. And the next pasuk continues, the Doyovesh Mador Kabal Machusa, Doyovesh the Modi, the Aporas Modai, so Doyovesh was from Modai. This is not, by the way, the Doyovesh, the son of Esther. This is Doyovesh, that was Doyovesh the Persian. This is Doyovesh the Mede. And yet again, Poras and Modai, two different nations that had federated together to form an empire. Anyway, so the Doyovesh Mador Kabal Machusa, so Doyovesh the Modi received the kingship. When he was 62 years old. So that was it. That was the end of the 70 years. By the way, the Medrash explains why is it important to tell us Daryovish's age. It tells us, actually, if we look back at the calculation we just did, it comes out 62 years before Belshazzar's party and Belshazzar's death. 62 years before that comes out to when Nebuchadnezzar first took Yechoniah into Golos, together with at that point he had taken some of the Kalim of the Beis Mikdash into Golos, as well as the Talmid Chachamim. So from when Nebuchadnezzar had for the first time entered the Beis Mikdash and stolen some of its Kalim, right then Daryavesh, who eventually was going to overthrow his empire, was born, showing that the Eidish is always Machim before the Makkah, that the Eidish always puts the cure before the blow. Anyway, so So now, a few years later, Ahasuerus is saying to himself, Omar, ihu mitatoi, obviously Belshazzar made a mistake, and he paid for it with his life and his kingdom. Anot chashiv nevloi te'ina. I'm going to remake the same calculation of the 70 years. I'm not going to make a mistake. Because, after all, he says, miksiv malchus Babel. Yirmiyah never said that the 70 years count from the kingship of Babel, which would imply, like Belshazzar thought, that it counts from when Nebuchadnezzar first became king, and then when you add together the length to the reigns of Nebuchadnezzar plus Evel Merodach plus Belshazzar, then he reached 70. No, the Babel Ksiv. After all, Yirmiyah had said that it's 70 years of Babel. My Le Babel, Le Golos Babel. So it must mean since the Golos of Babel, meaning the first one, the first time when Nebuchadnezzar came and exiled anybody from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. So how much does that make us short? Tamni. It makes 8 years short because, again, Nebuchadnezzar took that first galus in his eighth year. So now, in other words, like we're saying, it's only so from then, from Golos Yechonia until Belshazzar's party and until Belshazzar's death, as we said, was 62 years, which is why we said Dariavesh himself was 62 years old. Well, then we need another 8 years to reach 70. Okay, so Ahasuerus says, Choshiv, so he calculated, but Oyo Chilufayu, instead of the 8 years that are missing, we have to add in Choda de Belshazzar, the one more year of Belshazzar, because again, he made this party at the end of the second or beginning of his, at the beginning of his third year. He still had, you still have to count a year that already we said in his second year, the 70 years were over. So you have to add the third year of Belshazzar, b'chomesh to Dayavish for Kodesh. Between Dayavish and Kodesh, you have 5 years, because Rashi explains, in other words, that first there was Dayavish, then there was Kodesh, who gave permission to the Jewish people to go rebuild Eretz Yisrael. So right now, the Gemara, now we doesn't say in the Pasuk how long they ruled, but right now the Gemara is assuming that between them they ruled for 5 years. The Tautidi day, 2 more years of Ahasuerus himself that had already passed, Hoshavin. So now we're up to 70. So now he figures, Kivin de Chazi de Malu Shavin, now he sees that 70 years have passed and they haven't been redeemed. Omar, he thinks to himself, Ahasuerus, Hashta Vada Tulay Mifriti, now for sure they're not going to be taken out of Golos, because unlike Belshazzar, who calculated from the wrong starting point, I calculated from the right starting point, the Golos of Yechonia, and that was 70 years ago. So again, he took out the Kalim of the Besmikdash, like Belshazzar did, the Ishtamash Bahu, and he used them. They weren't necessarily, by the way, the same Kalim. The Pesukim at the beginning of Sefer Ezra described that in between these events, when Kodesh became king, and he announced that the Jewish people can go and rebuild Eretz Yisrael, it says he took out the Kalim of the Besmikdash that had been in the treasury of Nebuchadnezzar and then gave them to the Jews to bring back to Eretz Yisrael. But the point is, there were actually, that Ramban explains over here, there were actually two different sets of Kalim that went into Golos at different times. There was one set that was taken when Nebuchadnezzar arrested Yechonia and put him in jail. And then there was another set that were taken when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Besmikdash 11 years later. So the original ones that he plundered the first time, those were the ones that went back with Kodesh's proclamation. The second set, the ones that were in the Besmikdash until the very end, those are the ones that were still in Shushan at the time. Remember that the story of Purim happens during the time when the building of the Beis Mikdash was suspended, as we're going to talk about later, and therefore, so now these Kalim are still located in Golos, in Shushan, and Ahasuerus was able to use them. So what happened? Bas Satan v'rikid b'nei'en, the Satan came and danced between them. In other words, they caused a friction, a rift between Ahasuerus and Vashti, a fight between them. Vashti ended up getting killed. Now, you notice with Belshazzar, it's he got killed. With Ahasuerus, it's Vashti got killed. So why is that? There's a couple of points. First of all, Vashti herself was actually a daughter of Belshazzar. So she's actually the descendant of Nebuchadnezzar and the kings after him of Babel. And as we learned before, one of the psichas for Megillas Esther, we mentioned a pasuk where Hashem says, I'm going to destroy the kingdom of Babel completely, including Neched, which we said Zu Vashti, I mean, even the grandchildren Vashti. So therefore, her death is like the last part of the defeat of Babel. So therefore, it was more appropriate that she should be killed. Besides which, another point is also Achashverosh had to stay alive because eventually from him is going to come Daryavesh, the second Daryavesh, who actually gave permission for the Beis Hamikdash to continue being rebuilt. Okay, so that's that. So Achashverosh was also wrong in his calculation. But that's why he made that party in his third year, because he thought the 70 years were. You look at my paper over here, you can see he thought 37, 23, 32, 32 equals 70. So the question is, the Gemara says, v'hashaper choshev. Isn't his calculation correct? Where did he go wrong that his party went so wrong? The answer is inunami mitatoi. The answer is Achashverosh made a mistake as well. He's counting from Golas Yechoniah. Instead, he should have counted from when Yerushalayim was destroyed. As in fact, you have the pasuk in Daniel that we quoted before that says, "Lamalas l'chorves Yerushalayim shivim shana." So he should have counted from the Churban. Well, the Gemara says, "Soif kama b'tziran." Well, in that case, how many are we actually missing? How long was it from Yechoniah's golos until Tzidkiyahu's golos in the Churban? Chadesar. It's 11 years. Well, ihu kama molach arbesar. How long did Achashverosh himself rule? 14 years. How do we know that? Because we know that in the 12th year of Achashverosh was when Haman made his girdle, and that's when you have all the following events of the next few chapters of the Megillah all take place during Achashverosh's 12th year. In the 13th year was the war where the Jewish people defeated their enemies on the 14th, on the 13th and 14th of Adar. And then the following year, the pasuk says that Mordechai and Esther sent out Igeres HaPurim Azois HaShenis, the second letter of Purim, telling everybody that they have to celebrate Purim and telling them what the details of the story were. So that was Achashverosh's 14th year. We don't find any more years for him after that. Therefore, we can assume that that was his last year. So he was king 14 years. Well, by that logic, in Achashverosh's 14th year, the Beis Hamikdash should have been rebuilt, because at that point, the 70 years are up. So why does it say in the Pasuk in Ezra, they died in Betilas Avidas Beis HaLakod Yerushalayim, that what happened was, so they'd started building the Beis Hamikdash because of Kodesh's proclamation. Then the Tzora Yehuda ben Yamin, the Kusim, and the other enemies of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael massed on them and claimed that they're trying to rebel. So the kings after him, Kodesh himself, Achashverosh, whatever, rescinded the permission. It remained unfinished for 18 years. Finally, at the end of those 18 years, which again brings us to 70 years from the Churban, then the Nevi'im told them to start rebuilding again, and they got permission from Daryavesh, the son of Achashverosh and Esther, and that was, the pasuk says, that it was in the second year of Daryavesh. Now, according to the calculation we just made, the second year of Daryavesh is already 72 years after the Churban. Where were the missing 2 years? And the answer is, Amar Rav Shanim Kutois Tavu. The answer is, we have to remember that there were incomplete years involved over here. Namely, when we say, again, when we said before that Nebuchadnezzar was king for 45 years, we don't mean a full 45, we mean 44 and a fraction. When Evel-Merodach was king for 23 years, it doesn't mean 23, it means 22 and a fraction. Remember, we learned in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that when a person becomes king, we count that's already the first year of his reign, even if there's very little left in the year. We said even if there's only one day left in the year, we still count that as the first day of his reign. So take for example with Nebuchadnezzar. So his years as a Goyish king begin in Tishrei. He died, we said, on the 25th of Adar, a little less than halfway through the year. Evel-Merodach becomes king now at the end of Adar, and his first year ends at the end of Elul that year. So therefore, between Nebuchadnezzar and Evel-Merodach, you don't have full 68 years as we thought originally. You really only have 67 years. And the same way, Daryavesh and Kodesh, in between them, you don't really have 5 full years. You have a little over 4 years. So therefore, you're missing 2 years. Those are the 2 years that are made up for by the fact that the rebuilding began only in the middle of the second year of Daryavesh. So now we're saying, in other words, Achashverosh's calculation was off in two ways. Number one, Achashverosh hadn't taken the partial years into account. So when he made his party, it wasn't even full 70 years since Golos Yechoniah. It was only about 68 years. And number two, in any case, he calculated from the wrong starting point. He counted from Golos Yechoniah rather than he should have counted from the Churban. And the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hachi. We learned similarly in a Braisa that when we said before that it was 70 years until Belshazzar's party, it wasn't actually completely accurate. But Oid Shana Acheres LeBavel, really there should have been one more year of Bavel when Belshazzar was killed. But Omer Daryavesh Veishlima, Daryavesh, the first Daryavesh that is, filled out that 1 year. What would have happened? There was, after all, a nevuah that 70 years. If Belshazzar had not been chutzpahdik and used the kalim of the Beis Hamikdash at his party, then he would have gotten to rule one more year upon him, because that would have filled out the 70th year. Like this, it was really only the beginning of the. Like this, it was really only the end of the 69th year when he made his party, and he miscalculated again because these partial years. Marsha points out, anyway. I mean, another consideration that should have been taken into account also is: are we counting from when Nebuchadnezzar became king, or conceivably we should count from when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Jehoiakim, from when Nebuchadnezzar first became involved in Eretz Yisrael, which, as we said, was 18 years before the Churban. So maybe then Belshazzar should have been calculating from that, and then for sure there's a year missing. So the Gemara says, so that shows, in other words, that when we say that Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 and Abu Mered 23, we don't mean full 45 and full 23. We mean fractions, and between the two of them, it's really only 67 years. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, after Daniel tar b'hai chushbana. As a matter of fact, Daniel also made the same mistake. Dichtiv, he describes in his sefer, Bishnas Achas Lamolchoi, in the first year of the reign of King Daryavesh, Ani Daniel Binoisi Basfarim, I, Daniel, was looking and trying to understand the Sfarim, meaning he's trying to understand what's the deal with the 70 years, because the Jewish people haven't been taken out of Golos yet. And Midikoma Binoisi, since he says Binoisi, I had to delve into it, Miklal the Torah. That means he made the same kind of mistake that he thought. That he didn't take the partial years into consideration, or that he thought that you have to count from when Nebuchadnezzar first became king, or from when he first dominated Eretz Yisrael, rather than from the Churban. And later on in the Perek, he tells how a Malach came and explained to him what it actually is going to mean. So now the Gemara says, "Mekol makom kashu kroy adavi." Still, you seem to have a contradiction in the Pesukim. Ksiv l'melois l'bavel. After all, Achashverosh has a point. Yirmiyahu and his nevuah had said that when those 70 years filled up for Bavel, which fine, however you want to explain that, whether it means like Belshazzar thought from the beginning of Bavel's reign, or whether you think like Achashverosh that it means from when Bavel first took Jews into Golos. Either way, that's not the same thing as the Churban. Uchtiv l'chorvas Yerushalayim. And then you have the pasuk in Daniel that says that you count from the destruction of Yerushalayim. So what is it? So when do the 70 years begin and end? So Rava explains, the first one is not saying that there was going to be a complete geula. It means there was going to be a remembrance of Hashem, that Hashem was going to cause that the king of that time, who was Kodesh, is going to give them permission to go back to Eretz Yisrael and start rebuilding. But it doesn't mean that the complete rebuilding is going to take place then. And in fact, that's what happened, that the Tzor Yehuda ben Yamin mastered on them and forced the stoppage of the work for 18 years. So this is what the pasuk means when it says Koyam Kodesh Melech Paras, that Kodesh Melech Paras announces when he becomes king. Hashem, the God of heaven, has given me all of the kingdoms of earth, which we said yesterday it wasn't necessarily literally that he ruled over all of them. He was exaggerating a bit. Anyway, Vahu Fakad Olai, he commanded me Livnos Leibayis to Yerushalayim, to build him a house, to build him a mikdash in Yerushalayim. So we see, in other words, that they were remembered. He used the same word, pokad, he gave this permission, which was Hashem remembering the Jewish people after 70 years of one aspect of Golos, that now they can go and rebuild. And Marsha points out, I mean, even though the work on the Beis Hamikdash was stopped for those 18 years, still it means that during those 18 years, Eretz Yisrael wasn't as desolate as it was before, during the 52 years after the Churban, Eretz Yisrael had been completely desolate. Even the animals, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, had gone away. Now, at least you have Jews living in Eretz Yisrael again, so that's a cause for a certain simcha, even though it wasn't a complete geula. But that's the point, in other words. So really, both things are true. There was 70 years after the beginning of the kingdom of Bavel was Hashem remembered the Jewish people and had Kodesh announce that they can go rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. 18 years later, which is 70 years from the Churban, is when Daryavesh, the second Daryavesh, said that they can continue rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash, that they can finish off the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash. So both things came true. In a certain sense, you have, you know, sometimes you have like that. For example, when it says about the 400 years in Mitzrayim, the same thing. When do the 400 years count from? The Eibishter could have made it that it counts from when they actually came to Mitzrayim. Instead, he had Rachmanus and counted it from earlier, from the time when Yitzchak Avinu was born. So sometimes you have such things where a time can be counted from one starting point versus from a different starting point, and that so the actual number of years will come true, but how it comes true can depend. Can depend on Ma'asenu, Vavar, Dasenu, or other factors that Hashem takes into consideration. By the way, an interesting point in this connection worth mentioning, the historian Josephus tells, now you have Yeshaya gave Nevuas about Kodesh, which we're going to quote one now in the Gemara, and in several of them he actually names Kodesh explicitly. Yeah, but when you think about it, many Nevuas about the future, it doesn't explicitly say in the name of the king, but here you have 150 or so years earlier, Yeshaya saying in Nevuah that there's going to be King Kodesh is going to allow the Jewish people out of Golis. So the historian Josephus says that when Kodesh became king, there actually came to him, some of the Chachamim came to him and showed him those psukim, and he was very impressed that 150 years earlier there was a Navi who knew about him and knew his name and everything. So he said, in that case, no question, I have to follow that, and that's why he gave the permission. So in this connection, since we're talking about Kodesh's proclamation, the Gemara says, Dodash of Nachman Bar Avchista, my dichtiv, what does it mean, one of those psukim in Yeshaya, so says Hashem to his anointed one, to Kodesh whose right hand I have strengthened. So why is that on the face of it? It sounds like we're calling Kodesh Mashiachai. But what does that mean? Was Kodesh actually Mashiach? Or was he even anointed? Was he anointed like with Shemin HaMishcha? No. Ella, what it means is, what the pasuk means, Amalei HaKodesh Baruch Hu Mashiach, means Hashem at that point was saying to Mashiach, Kovel Ani Lecha Al Kodesh. I am complaining to you about Kodesh. So Koyim Hashem L'Mashiach, it means Hashem says to Mashiach, to the Neshama of Mashiach, regarding Kodesh, L'Chodesh, Asher Chzakti B'Mina, regarding Kodesh, I have a complaint. He didn't live up to what he was supposed to. Ani Amarti Hu Yivne Beisi V'Kavetz Kodesh Yisrael. I said that he, as the pasuk continues, that he will build my house and he will gather my Goliath together. The actual Lashon HaPasuk is slightly different, but whatever. The point is that that Hashem expected that Kodesh is actually going to take the initiative personally and go help build the Beis Mikdash and take the Jewish people out of Golis. Well, who am I instead? All Kodesh did is he announced, Mivachem Mikolam Eviyal, anybody who wants from Hashem's people can go up. In other words, you can do whatever you want, but I'm not getting involved. So therefore, so Hashem is disappointed with Kodesh that he had such high hopes for him and then he didn't live up to them. Rashi points out in this connection, you look in the pasuk in Yeshaya, you notice a very interesting feature. Throughout Tanakh, throughout the 21 books of Tanakh that use the same system of Tirup, not counting Tilim, Mishle, and most of Iyov, throughout the rest of the books of Tanakh, you have a Tirup called Zarka. And whenever you have a Zarka, you always have a couple of words, a word or two words or three words later, you have a Segel. Here is the one place in all of Tanakh where you don't. You have the word L'Mashichai, Koyama Hashem, has Munach Zarka. The word L'Mashichai has another Zarka. And then L'Chodesh Asher Chzakti B'Minoi instead begins a different sequence of Turab, Munach Revi. So that hints at the idea that L'Mashichai is the end of one section of the Pasuk. It doesn't go together with L'Chodesh. Because they have, normally you would have Koyama Hashem, L'Mashichai, with L'Chodesh, normally the word Kodesh would have a segel. Instead, it's like broken off, and then you start a new sequence of Turup, hinting at this idea that Kodesh is not what he was supposed to be. That was saying that what the Mashiach is Hashem speaking to Mashiach, to Mashiach, and complaining to him about, look what Kodesh did or didn't do. So there, and the Turup, therefore, reflect that. Okay, going back now to the drushes of the Megillah, the pasuk says that Achashverosh invited to his first party, he invited the army of Paras Umadai and the noblemen. So the point is, it says Paras before Madai, and also more to the point, also it says Mod. Rashi says the point is that it says Madai next to Apautimim, implying that the Pautimim, the nobles, are from Madai. Uchtiv l'malchei Madai Aparas, but then at the end of the Megillah, it mentions the kings of Madai Aparas, implying that the kings are from Madai. So what is it? Were the kings from Madai, or were the noblemen from Madai? That's according to Rashi. Maosho explains the question that the first time it says Madai, it says Paras or Madai, and at the end of the Megillah, it says Madai Aparas. So which one was more important? Amar Rava, so Rava says, remember, it was a federation of two different nations that had joined together to form an empire. So Rava says that was the point. Asnuye asnu ba'adadi. They made a deal with each other when they formed this joint kingship. I minan malchi, if at a certain point the kings come from our nation, minaychu ifrachi, then the governors and the nobles and whatever will come from your nation. And vice versa. If the kings come from you, then the noblemen and the governors and whatnot will be from us. So therefore, so in other words, so at the beginning of the Megillah, you have Chel Poras Umodai HaPautimim. The people of Modai are the Pautimim because Ahasuerus is from Persia. At the end of the Megillah, when it says Malchim Modai or Poras, it means that there were periods of time during that empire when the kings were from Modai and the ministers and whatnot were from Poras. So that's why you have the order flipped around. Next, the pasuk continues, that at this party, Ahasuerus showed off the wealth of the glory of his kingdom. So, as you quote, Ferris Gedulase, it continues in the pasuk. So, from that we learn that Ahasuerus actually wore the clothes of the Kohanim to his party. And we know that here it describes that Ahasuerus had the splendor of the majesty of his greatness. The big Kohanim also described as Tiferes. So therefore, since it says that he showed off Tiferes Gedulase, means that he showed off the big Kohanim. So they again they had been plundered many years earlier from Yerushalayim by Nebuchadnezzar, and now they were still by him, and now he took them and wore them. Next, the pasuk says, "Ovim lois hayomim ha'elav ha'zomer." At the end of those seven, so he had a 180-day party for the ministers and the army and whatnot, and then there was a 7-day party for the people of Shushan. So Rav and Shmuel argue when Ahasuerus did it in that order, first the noblemen and the army and whatnot, and then the people of Shushan, was that a good idea or not? One says he was a smart king for doing that. The other one says he was a foolish king. The one who says that he was smart means shaper of it. He was doing it in a smart way. The court of Rachika Beresha, that he first is bringing close the ones who are far away, the army and the ministers and whatnot, who are scattered all over the kingdom. He needs to first get them on his side. The people of the city, he can take his time with them. They're under his control. They're under his direct control anyway. They're right there in the capital city. It's very easy for him to dominate them. So therefore, he figured he could wait with getting them on his side. First, it's important to get the ministers and the army and whatnot on his side because they're scattered all over the kingdom. And this way, this will bind them more strongly to him. So that's Melech Pikeachaya. The opinion that says that he was foolish is just the opposite. First, he should be working on getting the people of the city of Shushan on his side. If the people far away, if the army and the nobles and whatever that are from other parts of the kingdom rebel against him, if those rebel against him, then the ones in Shushan are going to be on his side and help defend him. So in other words, you always need to make sure that the ones closer to you are going to be on your side first. So therefore, according to that, he was Melech Tifish. He should have first made a party for them to get them on his side and then worry about the far away ones. Okay. Since we're mentioning Ahasuerus's party, so let's talk about that. Shalom Talmud of Esther B'Shim Ben Yechoy, Mipnei Man Nischaibu Sen'en Sho Yisrael Shav Oysa Der Kloya. Why were the Sinai and Shah Israel, which means the Jewish people themselves, in that generation, why were they deserving of being wiped out? Why was there a Gzeira of Haman in the first place? Okay, in the end, but why were they even subject to such a Gzeira in the first place? So Rav Shimon tells us, Talmidim, you say, give me an answer, and then we'll discuss it. So they said, because they enjoyed the Suda of that Russia, meaning Ahasuerus. The Rebbe used to talk about this, by the way, a lot of times. We're not saying that they ate by the party necessarily, and even the eating itself might not have been a problem. The Gemara discusses further down on the Amud that it was Kitzoin Mordechai, that everything was according to the way Mordechai wanted, the food was kosher and everything. The problem is that Nenu Misudasa Shalosh Rosha, they enjoyed it. They said to themselves, look at this, we finally made it. We're finally equal citizens with everybody else. We enjoy Ahasuerus' favor. What more do we need than that? So the Eibishter shows them, you think so, you can find that your situation in Golos is a lot more precarious than you thought. Anyway, so that was the answer they gave. So Rav Shimon tells them, Im Kain, by that logic, Sheba Shushan Yehogu, only the ones who are in Shushan should be killed. Sheba Chola Elam Kola Yehogu. Why is the Gzeira on the whole rest of the empire? They didn't eat from Ahasuerus' Soda. They didn't enjoy Ahasuerus' Soda. Omru Loi, so the Chacham say, okay, the Talmudim say, okay, fine. Emer Atta, so okay, you don't like our answer, you say an answer. Amalahem, so Rav Shimon tells them, because they had bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. Which, by the way, there are places in Tosfos, in other places in Shas, where Tosfos explains that this statue wasn't even Avodah Zarah per se. It was meant in honor of the king, to glorify the king. But to bow down to it constituted a Chilul Hashem, and it was Hanani Mishael Azariah stood up against it, but the rest of the Jews did not. Omru Loi, so the Chachamim says, so the Talmidim said to Rav Shimon, in that case, they taka did bow to the statue, v'chimase ponim yesh b'davar, so what is their favoritism involved over here? The fact is they did bow to it, so therefore, so the Gzeira should have actually come out l'poil. Why indeed was the Gzeira cancelled? What zchus did they have that the Gzeira should be cancelled? Amalahem, so Rav Shimon answers them, heim lo osu elo l'fonim, because to begin with, when they bowed down to the statue in Nebuchadnezzar, they didn't do it because they really believed in the, let's say, going according to the opinion that it was Avodah Zarah. They didn't really believe in the Avodah Zarah that it represents, or they didn't really believe in whatever it is that it's supposed to represent. They were only doing it lafanim. They're only doing it on the surface out of fear, because they're afraid of the Nebuchadnezzar's reaction if they disobey. As in fact, we see that he got angry at Hanani Mishael Azariah and threw them into the fire. So Afa Kodesh Baruch Hu Lo'aseimon Ela Lafanim. So the same way, when Hashem acted against them and brought the Gzeira of Haman, he also did it as like a pretend thing. He made it that it looks like Haman is going to exterminate them, Chas V'Shalom. And in the end, Hashem was planning all along that Haman is going to get defeated and the Jewish people are going to be saved. The same way as they acted only, you know, they were pretending, so Hashem, so to speak, also pretended. Behind it, Kilo Inami Livoi, as the Pasuk says, Hashem doesn't want in his heart to afflict the Jewish people. So the same way over here, in other words, Hashem wasn't doing it just that he really wanted to. He had to do it. He had to do it on the surface in order to clean up that problem of them bowing down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. There is actually an interesting point that's made in this when you think about it. So what happened in Shushan itself right away? They knew what was going on and Ra'u Shushan Navoicha. In the rest of the provinces of the kingdom, many Mephoshim talk about the idea based on the wording of the Megillah that in the other provinces, Haman didn't actually send out explicit instructions saying kill all the Jews on the 13th of Adar, because he knew that if such instructions get out, if it leaks out, then they're going to be doing everything they can to petition Ahasuerus to take that back. So therefore, he just sent out messages that said everybody has to be ready. All the nations in the empire have to be ready to fight on the 13th of Adar, whichever enemy we tell you at the time. Where, of course, he knew he'd sent secret messages to the governor that the enemy in question is the Jewish people. So therefore, in Shushan itself, the Jews knew that they were slated to be killed. Well, therefore, that fits with the fact that they were the ones who nenu misudasa shalosh rasha. On the other hand, in the rest of the empire, they b'chlal didn't know to begin with, until the actual 13th of Adar came, that they were ever in danger. So therefore, to the extent that they were worried, because it might be against them, then that was only lefanim. It was only a pretend thing. Especially they didn't realize. Here's another point also, that by the time the news reached the other provinces, Haman was long since dead. I mean, he was dead 3 days after he made his Zera. So when you think about it, only in Shushan did they ever have any actual genuine fear of Haman. In the rest of the kingdom, they never even did, because by the time they get the news, they didn't know that Haman is long since dead. So therefore, in that sense, it was only pretend, and that's what we're saying. That was because they had pretended to bow down to the Nebuchadnezzar statue. Okay. Moving along in the Megillah, the Pasuk says, "Bachatzar ginas bisan hamelech," that Ahasuerus made the party in the chotzer, the garden, the orchard of the king. So chatzar means the chotzer, means an open area. Ginas means a garden, like where you grow vegetables. And bisan means an orchard where you have trees. So what is it? Where was the party? Rav and Shmuel disagree what that means. Chad Omar, one says it means Haroi L'chotzer L'chotzer, whoever was of the caliber that they belong in the Chotzer, like in the least important place, L'chotzer, then Achashverosh had them seated in the Chotzer. Haroi L'gina, somebody who's on a higher level, more important, who deserves to be in the garden, would be L'gina. Haroi L'bisan, and whoever deserves to be in the orchard, L'bisan, would be in the orchard. So different places depending on people's rank. V'chad Omar, the other explanation says, Hashivan b'chotzer v'layach zikasan. He put them. He started by putting them in the chotzer, but it wasn't big enough for all of them. Beginner v'layach zikasan. Then he put the overflow he put in the garden, and it still wasn't enough. Adshech nisan l'bisan, until finally he brought them into the orchard v'chzikasan, and that had room for all of them. In a braisa, we learn a third possibility. It means hashivan b'chotzer, means he put them, he seated them in the chotzer. He had two doors open, one that leads to the garden, one that leads to the orchard. So this way, Ben Yehoyada explains, like this, it might be boring for them to stay in the same place for too long in the chotzer. So therefore, he made doors, he arranged that there should be doors into the ginah and the bisan, so they could take a walk when they wanted to and see different scenes. Next, the pasuk describes the decorations by the party. Chur karpas et chelas. So my chur, what does the word chur mean? By the way, in the Megillah, the word chur is written with an extra large ches, and it says that that's a remez to the fact that he wore the eight big de kahuna, as we said before. But what does the word chur itself mean? Again, we have machlokes. Rab ama chori chori. Rab says it means hangings that were made by sewing with a needle, and they're made out of material that there was a lot of holes in them, like there it was like lace, it was like lace kind of. Or another explanation of chori chori means something that's suitable for noblemen, bnei chorin. Or Shmuel amar milas levana hitzia lahem. Shmuel says it means he set out for them white silk. Silk in those days was extremely expensive, so if he's able to put out hangings of silk for them, then it shows how rich he was. Next, when it says karpas, what is that? Omer Rav Yosef bar Chanina means korim shel pasim. It means that he put out for them pillows and cushions of pasim. So pasim is like sonus pasim. So pasim is like sonus pasim, like Yosef's coat. And there were we know that there were of course many different explanations what pasim means. It can mean it was made out of silk. It can mean it had many different stripes of colors. Whatever it was, here it means the same kind of thing. As far as the previous one, chur, so Rav had said that it means chori chori, that it means that it has many holes, it's lace work. Shmuel said that it's milas levana, which means he's darshaning the word chur, is milashan chivar, which means white. And karpas, then, is karim shal pasim, is ones made out of silk, made out of colorful silk. Next, it says, al glile kesef amudei sheish, that these hangings were on silver rods and on gold and on marble poles. Next, it continues. Mitos zahav v'kesef. They had beds or couches of gold and silver. So why gold and silver? Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Imer haroi l'kesef l'kesef, haroi l'zahav l'zahav. Whoever was deserving of having a silver one would get a silver one. Whoever was deserving of having gold was on a higher rank would get a gold one. Rabbi Nechemi says, can't be. Can't have a mato kin of a suda. Then that would cause people are going to be jealous of each other. Somebody is going to look over and see that the next guy has a golden one and he only has a silver one. He's going to get jealous. Tosfos points out, it's one thing when we said before about the opinion, the first opinion about chatzal ginas bisan. Okay, each one is in their own area. One is in the chotzer, one is in the gina, one is in the bisan. So they don't see each other, so there's no jealousy. But here, they're sitting right next to each other. Ella, so no, Rav Nechemia says, what it means is heim shel kesef v'raglehen shel zahav. The frames of the beds were made out of silver, the frames and the seats of the beds were made out of silver, the legs were made out of gold, where the idea being, the bed itself, the couch itself, would be covered with some kind of spread, the chur karpas of chelis that we said before, but the legs would be exposed, therefore he made the legs out of gold, because those would be visible. Next, the pasuk says that they had a floor over there of bahat v'sheish. So what is bahat? Amar Avashi, avonim shemischoititos al ba'alehem. It means stones, precious stones that a person has to dig for. Mischoititos, meloshin choitit. A person has to dig and work hard to get such stones and pay a high price for them. So those were the kind that Achashverosh used as the flooring by his party. As we see that the Pasuk praises precious stones and describes them as Avne Nezer, stones that are fit to be in a crown. A person has to go in a lot of Nisyonis, Alad Masai, on his land, meaning the Pasuk is using this as a metaphor for how in the future the Jewish people are going to be known as the most precious and important of nations when they're living in their land, Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, they're compared to precious stones. That misnosis says that a person has to go through tremendous misyonis for them. Rabbeinu Hananel has a different explanation of mischoititos and misnosis. He says, mischoititos is meloshen chet. These are the kind of precious stones that in a kingdom in those days, no commoner would even be allowed to own such precious stones. If he did, then he'd be committing a crime, and he could get in trouble for that. And misnosis means meloshen nisa, meloshen running away. If a person has such a stone in his possession, he would run away rather than have to face the king's police. And the point is that Achashverosh had so many such precious stones that he was able to make a floor out of them. Next, the pasuk continues that there was bat v'sheishet as v'dar v'secharas. So what does the word dar v'secharas mean? Rav amad dori dori. Rav says it means there were rows and rows of these precious stones around the people. So dar is the word for row in Aramaic. And secharas is meloshen schur, which in Aramaic means surrounding. So it means that he had rows of precious stones surrounding them. Shmuel says, no, Dara means the name of a stone. There's a precious stone which you can find in the seas, in the cities overseas. It's called Dara. He took one of those stones and hung it in the middle of the place where the Suda was taking place, and it shone for them like the bright noon. So in that case, Dar is the name of the stone. So Rashi says, is Meloshen Sihara, it's related to the Aramaic word Sihara, which means the moon, because it is brilliant and bright for them as the moon. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a third explanation of the word V'dar V'secharas, Shekara Dror L'chol Balei Schora. It means that as part of the party, Achashverosh took away, he called Dror, which means freedom, L'chol Balei Schora, for everybody who has merchandise to sell. In other words, he took off taxes or tolls from them. And that was part of his trying to get everybody on his side and get everybody's goodwill is to lower taxes for the merchants. So that's what David said. Next, the pasuk says, "Vahashkus v'chlei zahav." He gave them to drink in golden kelim, which, as we said before, are the kelim of the business. V'chelim, the kelim shonim, and he gave them different kinds of kelim. So the word shonim is unusual. Meshunim in Bo'ilei. The word should not be the expected word would be meshunim, which means different. Shonim literally means double. So what does that mean? Amar Rava means yot sabasko va'amra lahem. A basko came out and called out to the people by the party. Look, what happened? What do you think you're doing? Rishonim kolum miponai, Rishonim kolum mipnei kelim. The earlier group, Belshazzar and his group, when they had their party, they were destroyed because of these kelim. Ba'atam shonim behem. You're repeating the same mistake with those kelim. Shonim, in other words, meloshen repeating. And as we said before, the result was that Vashti was killed. Next, the Yain Malchus Rav, the pasuk says there was much royal wine. So what's the word rav? If they meant a lot, it would be harbe or something. Omar Rav, melamed shekol echad v'echad ishkohu yayin shegodol hamenu b'shonim. Means that each person was given to drink wine that was older than he was, which is a respectable kind of thing. The older, old wine tastes better. So therefore, the older a person was, the older wine he would get. So that's rav, like the wine was bigger and older than the person himself was. And the point of that is that way, for example, everybody can enjoy wine that's appropriate for them. Then the pasuk continues, Vashsiya chados ein oynes. It says the drinking was according to the law. There was no forcing anybody. So my chados, what does it mean according to the law? Amar Rav Chanan, Mishum Rameir, kidos shal Torah. It means that in preparing the menu for the party, Achashverosh followed the rule of the Torah. Ma das shal Torah achila meruba mishsiya. Just like in the Torah, we find there's more food than drink, because when we find by the korbanos, you look at the proportion of flour that was poured on the Mizbeach versus the proportion of wine that was poured on the Mizbeach, you have much more flour than wine. So you have three asroinim of soilus, which is an isorin of the shir chala, about 3 pounds or so. So you have three of those, which is about 9 pounds. Meanwhile, the wine is only chatzia hin, where a hin is about a gallon. So chatzia hin would be about a half a gallon, about three or four pounds. So you see that in Torah you have a concept of much more eating than drinking. So the same way afsu dasi shalaisa rasha achilam eruba mashsiya. In the same way, Ahasuerus did the same thing. He arranged that there should be more food than drinks. Tosfos does point out, now, if a person eats too much more than he drinks, that also causes health problems. We're talking about there should be, like we're saying over here, there should be somewhat more food than drink. And that's what Ahasuerus did. Next, the pasuk says, Ein oynes, there was no forcing. What does that mean? It means that each person was given to drink wine from his own country. Because that way, in other words, the person is not used to wine from a different country, that might have more an effect on him. He might more easily get drunk. So like this, every person was given wine that he's familiar with so that he would know how to drink it in moderation and not have to get drunk. Unless he wants to. That's the Einoin. The Pasuk finishes off that Achashverosh made this party, Lasis Kirtzon Ish V'Ish, to do according to the will of a man and a man. So literally, it means, Ish V'Ish means every person. But Gemara is explaining that Ish V'Ish means actually according to the will of two specific people. Omar Rava, Lasis Kirtzon Mordechai V'Haman. It means that Achashverosh made the party according to the will of Mordechai and according to the will of Haman. Mordechai Dechiv Ish Yehudi, Haman Ish Tzar V'Oyed. Now, in what sense did he make it like they wanted? So Rashi actually explains that means that they were the Sorei Hamashkim at the party. So it was all following what they wanted. Different Meforshim talk about different possibilities over here, one of them being that Mordechai didn't want them to come to the party because he didn't want them to be Nenu Mesudasei Shalosei Rasha, like we said before. Haman didn't want them to come to the party because he didn't want that they should be shown to be that important. So therefore, there was Kirtzon Ish V'Ish, kind of, you know, each one got their way, and therefore the Jews were, for the most part, not by the party. Another point is also when it says in earnest, they weren't being forced to drink the Yain Nesach. So Mordechai obviously didn't want them to be forced to drink the Yain Nesach. Haman didn't want them to be forced either. He wanted that if they're going to be drinking it, it should be willingly. So that way they could be punished by the Eidish for it. So therefore, in that sense, again, the not forcing anybody to drink or giving people that whatever kind of wine they wanted was both Kirtzon Mordechai and Kirtzon Haman. And then there are various other explanations as well. Okay. Next, the pasuk says, "Gam Vashti Amalka Osa Mishtei Noshem Beis Hamalkus." It says that Queen Vashti made a party for the women in the royal palace. So now, what do you mean, Beis Hamalkus implies the area of the palace that where Achshverosh and his people are? Beis Hanoshim Mibayle. Wouldn't you expect that her party is in the section of the palace for the women? Amar Rava, it means Shneim Mudvar Aver Neskavni. You should realize that both Achshverosh and Vashti intended to promote Znus by their party. So therefore, she's making her party not in Beis Hanoshim, where it's going to be tzniyastik and only women. Rather, she made it in Beis Hamalchus, where the women can mingle with the men. Hainu da'amri inchi, this is like the expression that people say, ihu b'kori, he, the husband, is involved with kori, which are large pumpkins, b'itse b'butzini, and his wife is with small pumpkins. In other words, big and small pumpkins are the same min. So it means, in other words, that the husband and wife, when the husband is a noyif, is a guy involved in his nus, very often so is his wife. So the same way, Ahasuerus is an immoral guy who's into his nus, and therefore we're saying so was his wife. So she therefore made her party in a way that would promote his nus. There's a different explanation, actually, that kori and butzini is that kori are plants that have large leaves, and butzini are ones that have smaller leaves. This is how the Orach explains it. So therefore, it means that he tries to at least hide under the large leaves. She doesn't even bother. She does it shamelessly, even when there's only small leaves to hide her. In other words, she's more, in such cases, the wife is more open about her znus. So the same way, Ahasuerus, it doesn't say so clearly in the pasuk that he was doing his party with the intention to promote znus, but by her, it says outright that she made it in Beis HaMalchus to imply that point. Next, the pasuk says, "Bayoyim Ashvi Ketov Leiv Hamelach Bayoyin." On the seventh day, when the king's heart was happy, was good with wine. So, what does that mean? Only on the seventh day, Otarat Hashta Loi Tavli B'Bechamra. And what? Until the seventh day, his heart was not good with wine. Wasn't he drinking throughout the party? Amar Rava, it doesn't mean the seventh day of the party. It means Yom HaShvi'i Shabbos. It means it was the seventh day of the week. It was Shabbos. Yisrael Ochlin V'Shoisin. Now, when the Jewish people eat and drink on Shabbos, Maschilin B'Divrei Torah, B'Divrei Nishbachos. They say Divrei Torah. They say praises to Hashem. Aval Ovid Kechavim Sh'Ochlin V'Shoisin. But you see that when the Goyim eat and drink, Maschilin B'Divrei Tifelos, Ein Maschilin Ela B'Divrei Tifelos, they begin talking about immorality, about Znus. And that's what happened. That's exactly what happened by that Rosh's Suda, by Achashverosh's Suda. Halalu Oimim Modius Nois. So they started a discussion. Which women are the most beautiful? So the people from Modai are saying the women from Modai are the most beautiful. But Halalu Oimim Parisius Nois. The other ones are saying the Persians are the most beautiful. And each one is saying that the people from my country are the most beautiful. Omalahem Achashverosh. So Achashverosh tells them, listen. I'll prove that you're all wrong. The keli that I use, in other words, the wife that I have and that I have relations with, she's neither from Modai nor from Paras. She's a Kasti, because we said she was a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar. You want to see her, and then you'll see for yourself that she's actually the most beautiful. So they said, sure. But as long as you show her to us undressed. Now, why are they thinking? First of all, we're saying that they're trying to promote Znus over here. So obviously that would be a good way to do it. There's also a portion of explain that they're saying, you know what, if you bring her dressed up in royal robes, of course, anybody who's in royal robes and a crown is going to look beautiful. Bring her without anything, and then we'll see for ourselves how beautiful she is without any adornments. Now, so why did that taka happen? Why did Hashem put that idea in their head? The measure in which a person does, that Hashem measures out to him. Midah keneg midah. This teaches us that this wicked Vashti used to take Jewish girls, she would strip them naked, and she would force them to do work for her on Shabbos. So therefore, midah keneg midah, she was made on Shabbos to be told that she has to appear in front of Achashverosh and everybody at the party naked. That's why also the pasuk says, "Achar advarim ha'ela." It says at the beginning of Perek Beis in the Megillah, after these matters, "Kishoich Hamas Amalach Achashverosh." When Achashverosh's anger calmed down, "Zocharas Vashti." He remembered Vashti, the Esa Sherasasa, and what she had done, the Esa Shenigzar Aleha, and what had been and what had been decreed against her. So what does that mean? What's the Asher Asasa of Esa Shenigzar Aleha? Kishem Shasasa Tach Nigzar Aleha. He realized exactly what she had done is what was Nigzar on her. Because she had done that to Jewish girls, therefore the Eibishter arranged that she got her punishment in the exact same way. Now, when it says about Tamoina Malkavashti, when it says that she refused to come, so what do you mean? Mechti Pritz Tahaboy. We just established that she was a Prutza. We just said that both she and Achashverosh are intending to promote Znus. My time, Aloyasoi. So why Taka didn't she show up? This teaches us that Saras started developing on her. Rashi and Tosfos both bring from Yerushalmi that says, how do we know Dafka Tzaraas? Because later on it describes as a Nigzar Aleha. The word Nigzar is used in connection with Uziah, Melech Yehuda, who got Tzaraas, and it says on him Nigzar Mibes Hashem. So therefore the word Nigzar is related to Tzaraas. So that teaches us that she got Tzaraas. So now she's embarrassed to come. The Masnisa Tana Bogavri over Osawa Zonav. In a brisa, we learn that Gavriel came and attached a tail to her. So therefore, also, she's embarrassed to come because she doesn't want to come appearing in front of everybody like that. The Maharal, by the way, says a tail doesn't necessarily have to mean literally a tail, as in something that sticks out from the back of her body. It can mean like something extra. It can mean like extra flesh. Like maybe she looked in the mirror, realized that she had gained a couple of pounds, and now she's embarrassed to appear in front of them. But the Eibishter arranged that should happen so that she should be humiliated and not want to come. And therefore, that's what got Achashverosh angry at her.